Welcome to the Anti-Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 183. I'm your host, Evan Minto, and with me, as always, is David Estrella, back from a brief hiatus from hosting.
You're finally going to do it, Evan. You're actually going to do it, and I'm actually going to watch you do it.
Is this the first time I've ever reviewed a JRPG on the show? Teasing a little bit here. I'll mention in a second what it is. I think it is.
Is it?
I guess we talked about Pokemon Sword and Shield, which counts, I guess.
It's so sort of, but it is Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise, I mean, I haven't played, I barely played any JRPGs, so
yeah.
I haven't reviewed any of the other ones I played, which is like the non-Pokemon ones, which is like just Mother and Earthbound.
Wow.
Is that it?
What
that
a might range.
Be it.
It's like every other week, every other time that I see you, you ask for a recommendation for an RPG, and I change it up, mm-hmm. but I don't... At this point, I'm just convinced maybe it's not your thing. However, one of our dear listeners has thought otherwise and has maybe for some reason been led to believe that they know a game that you should play.
That's right. So before we reveal the game, which is like going to be in the title, so you're going to know exactly what it is. But the patron here who gave us this recommendation is Fat Drunk Friend Otaku. And they sent in a golden ticket, which is one of our Patreon benefits for $5 a month. Patrons, you get a one-time use ability to force us to review something for good or for ill. We got this golden ticket submitted almost exactly a year ago, like a little more than a year ago. So I apologize for that. That was in September, end of September 2022. And Fat Drunk Friend Otaku requested that I do a podcast review of the 1998 JRPG / dating sim for the PlayStation, Thousand Arms, which I just recently finished playing.
Yeah, I know a fair amount of RPGs, and this one was still like, I hadn't heard of it until you brought it up as a game that was recommended to you for the golden ticket.
I had definitely not heard of it before this. I had to look it up. I was worried because I know JRPGs tend to be long, and I was like, well, we don't agree to really long ones for the golden ticket because it's just too impractical. but in this case, I forget what it was, but the how long to beat was within a reasonable range. I think we said 30 hours is like the maximum. We can make exceptions, but it's like we're just going to shoot stuff down if we think it's too long. Over 30 is the number that I think I threw out. And this came in at like 25 or something on how long to beat. It was similar for my actual playtime. I think it was about 35 hours, and that was with doing a little bit of extra stuff. So Thousand Arms, like I said, 1998, came out on the PlayStation 1. It was a 99 release in the US, and 98 is the Japanese release. And it was developed, we were doing a little bit of investigation on this earlier before the show started, developed by Tosei, but also by Red Company, and sort of depending on what source you're looking at, you see both of them credited, and I didn't remember if Tosei was in the like the game credits, but Red Company is definitely credited in like in the actual game credits. I remember seeing it in there, and it's published by Atlus, who I guess I didn't know that much about Atlus, and I think of their newer games and was not aware they were like putting stuff out in 98, but I guess they were, right? They were doing like Shin Megami Tensei and stuff, right?
It's funny to me just how many of those names are now owned by Sega.
Yeah, there's a big like Sega connection here, actually, which is interesting.
Sega was already shopping like even that long ago.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the people involved here who's pretty influential on this game, from what I can tell from the credits, is a guy named Teruhisa Hiroi, who is also known as Oji Hiroi, and is most famous for being the creator of Sakura Wars, and also of Tengai Makyo, which is not famous here, I don't think, but supposedly famous in Japan, which I discovered is a JRPG series that is basically like Ninja Slayer, where like the premise is that it is a game about Japan made by foreigners who don't know anything about Japan, which is sounds pretty funny and like I might be interested in. And Red Company is Hiroi's company, and so like there's a, you know, he's credited as executive producer, and this does seem like, you know, it's kind of his baby, and it's a lot of these a lot of people that he's kind of worked with before. And also, like you said, the Sega connection, Red Company was eventually bought by Sega and then spun back out into an independent company later. And Sakura Wars is, of course, published by Sega. So there's like a lot of Sega tendrils here. But this is not a Sega game. It's an Atlus game.
Mm-hmm. It's on the good old PlayStation. All 32 yeah. bits.
So I'll get into a little bit more of the production, but first off, just like, what is this? It is a JRPG, but also notably, especially for the time, because I think nowadays this is much more common, but it's a JRPG that incorporated dating sim elements. So it kind of has like a dating sim sort of wedged into the game. I you know, I'll get into this. I wouldn't say it's the most graceful combination of the two, but it is like, it's in there. And you do basically need to engage in the dating sim stuff to get through the JRPG stuff. So it's not like just a total, you know, sidebar to the main gameplay.
And they say that Persona invented dating.
Just dating in general. Yeah. Like, people started dating in real life after playing Persona.
Yeah, they saw that and they're like,
we should try that.
That looks crazy. Like, that's amazing. Maybe we can do that in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, classic example of video games being a bad influence on people. Yeah, so basically this is, I'll get into the specific story stuff, but it is a kind of a little bit of a steampunky fantasy RPG about, you know, sword and sorcery type stuff. Specifically, a lot of it is about blacksmithing, which is tied directly into the dating mechanics. So in terms of the production, just some more interesting folks involved. This is like a lot of anime stuff here. Like that's kind of like a major element of this that I didn't mention is like, it's very anime. So like the art is very anime style. The, I mean, just like storytelling wise, it feels very much like a 90s anime. And a lot of anime creators are involved at a high level on this. Notably, I didn't realize this when I played it, only when I was looking it up later. Takehiko Ito is credited as original creator and planning on this, so doing a lot of like the conceptual non-game dev-y work on it. And Ito is most famous in English for being the creator of Outlaw Star. And honestly, a lot of things clicked into place when I realized this was the Outlaw Star guy. It has, you know, this sort of spread of character types in it. Once I saw Outlaw Star, it was like, oh, of course it's Outlaw Star. It's like the same type, just the same sort of party of characters that is in Outlaw Star. And the character design is from Yuya Kusaka, who is the designer of Sorcerer Stabber Orphan, which also there's, you know, you can see the similarities in some of those character designs there. So yeah, it really does feel, you know, I know there's all this, you know, people like to talk about anime RPGs, like this is a very anime RPG. I know, David, you were like, so I should point out, David didn't play it.
This is all you. Know,
the golden ticket was directed at me, but yeah, you were watching some of it, right, to get the sense of
this, yeah, like, I got what the game. I got like. Hit with the anime voice acting, and
oh my god, yeah, the English, because this was released in English, so I played it with the English dub, and it's extremely 90s anime dub voice acting.
I think I recall, like, I offered to get you like the Japanese voices on, but like on the English language version of the game, and then you're like, no, I'm good. So how do you feel like 30 hours later after that?
Kind of regretting it, but I think it's regretting it in the sense of I probably would have enjoyed the Japanese voices more, but maybe not regretting it in the context of the review, because this game got an English release with no Japanese language track, and so I was experiencing it somewhat the way like a kid playing it in 1999 would, right?
Uh-huh.
And I should note, it does seem like of, you know, this is not that well known, but of the people who played it, I think people do have fond memories of it. It was reviewed decently. It wasn't like, you know, this is the greatest game of the year
no
or anything,
FF7, but
it was,
huh?
it got positive reviews. It, you know, people were happy with the dating mechanic. To spoil my opinion here, I don't know if I totally agree here, but it was interesting reading reviews where people were like, this dating is really well realized, and a lot of it is pretty rudimentary, but I guess that's, you know, the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, well, what did we have then? Didn't we have the Tokimeki Memorial by then? Like, in all seriousness, though, that's probably like really advanced dating compared to what you found in here.
So also, I mean, it's a funny thing. I, you know, that this patron sent this to me specifically, and maybe this is why they did that, is like, it's a JRPG dating sim, two genres that I have barely played.
Yeah. Right?
So I'm like, I really don't have a lot of other stuff to judge these against.
But it's got the anime in it.
Tokimeki is 94. So yeah, it did come out before this. It was actually a few games in at this point. There were, I don't know, some of them look like they're not the mainline games. But at the point that this game came out, there were like, oh my God, at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... at least 7 entries in Tokimemo. That includes like a puzzle side game and stuff like that.
But like, I mean, credits at least to Thousand Arms, because I think that they probably saw where things were going to go in the future. Like now it seems like every RPG that comes out has some sort of bonding mechanic with the people in your party. Like look at Fire Emblem. Like Fire Emblem got that shot in the arm the moment that Awakening came out, and it's all like, you can date the characters in here, right? With like your self-insert character.
I think that is a really good point, and something I would give this game credit for is it's like a early, maybe not the first example, but an early example of that. And now that's just what a lot of JRPGs
actually
are.
I think Atlas, right?
Like,
even
have some element
put
of
out like the Persona, like the first Persona game around this time as well. 1998
in Japan. Yeah.
So it would have been like 99 in the US?
Yeah, this was 99 in the US, Thousand Arms.
Yeah, so it's like maybe like a year or two apart. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's like They were just not there yet. Like, you know, Persona was going to carry on, right? And then like Thousand Arms is sort of this niche title.
Right, right. I think that covers a lot of the basics. I think we mentioned Tosei earlier. Tosei is like a very behind the scenes studio, from what I can tell. Like they're not a big name, but they work on a lot of like Nintendo stuff. And on this game, they appear to have also been a little bit behind the scenes, where like I think Red Company, which is the Sakura Wars guys company, Hidoi, like they were a lot of the concept and story and design stuff. And then Tosei seems to be maybe just the sort of dev house that helped actually build the game.
Yeah, I'm shocked by the amount of stuff Tosei's in, and like they won't even take credit for it. Like they just, it's like, I don't know, they just like help out.
Right. So I guess let's get into what the game actually is, what it plays like. And I guess I'll start with story, because really that brings us into the, you know, how all this dating and JRPG stuff intersects. So our main character is Mice Triumph. I guess Mice, like Meister, maybe is what it's alluding to. He is a spirit blacksmith, a very kind of young and inexperienced one. His father and kind of his father before him were all spirit blacksmiths. These are blacksmiths who make swords through sort of channeling magical powers from these kinds of like spirits that exist in the world. And the twist here is, in order to channel those powers, they need to form a relationship with a woman. And like, it's not quite clear how the mechanics of this work, but they need to do the forging, like with the woman there, kind of like channeling her energy in some way. Like, it's not a sex thing.
Wow.
Directly.
I was about to say.
It's definitely implied like it is a, you know, it has the vibe of a sex thing, but it's just, she's just standing there while he, like, you know, does the hammering on the sword.
Do you actually get a sword out of this?
Yes. So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, just first off, story-wise, that's what's going on, right? But yeah, I mean, mechanically, this is how you upgrade your weapons.
That's Fire Emblem.
Is by doing this.
That's Fire Emblem. You link up with the character, and then, I don't know, you get, like, a future baby coming in to join your party.
It's kind of like that. Yeah, you don't get a sword. In this case, you upgrade your swords by doing it, right? So you're, like, you're blacksmithing them. You're kind of, like, reforging them and adding abilities to them. So basically there's, you know, a couple different countries in this world. There's one called Dianova, and they've got this army called the Dark Acolytes, which is this, they're like, I think they seem like cyborgs and robots. They're all kind of cybernetic. And they've been invading the neighboring lands, very typical JRPG storyline, and they're kind of threatening the rest of the world. And Mice's town is attacked, and he escapes to the town of Boisby. And this is where we kind of have a little bit of an extended intro before, like, not quite an intro, but like the initial kind of town before we really get into the main storyline. And in that town is where you meet Sadina and her brother Jobble. But first, mice. A key fact about mice. So horny.
Mm.
That is like the main
late
personality 90s trait.
Anime yeah. protagonist. There, yeah, there it is.
Yeah, so mice is, you know, I what I was also, I just finished reading the first volume in the new Viz release of this. I've been reading Urusei Yatsura, and Ataru and mice are very much in the same vein. Just like guy who sees a beautiful woman and can't help himself. And his dad, exactly like that. So there's a little bit of a funny thing of having like the dad be a bad influence where he's like, now, you know, son, the most important thing is like, you know, making a beautiful woman happy.
Yeah, I feel like this is the sort of thing that was cliche like even years ago, where it's like if we saw this sort of thing turn up in like an RPG or a visual novel or something, it's like, oh, another one of these guys just stuck watching them maybe develop into something of a, like, you know, stand-up gentleman.
He only somewhat gets better, really. I mean, it's, you know, the game is not trying to critique his lifestyle.
No.
it's trying to make a joke out of it. I'm not a fan of this. This is not my favorite part of this game. but basically, like, Mice meets this girl, Sadina, when he shows up in Boysby and attempts to save her from some thugs who she doesn't really need saving from. And basically, like, doesn't do much, right, but impresses her with his chutzpah. And she saves him, actually, after he, like, passes out. And he... skipping some of the story here, but basically ends up getting trained by her older brother, Jobble. Very strange sounding name.
Jobble.
J-Y-A-B-I-L.
Jobble.
And everyone says it kind of funny too, because they've got like weird accents because it's a 90s anime dub. They got like, some of them sound like they are, like, I think Sadina kind of sounds like she doesn't have like a neutral American accent. She has an almost like country accent or something, which is like a little surprising. But yeah, basically, Jobble is a spirit blacksmith and begrudgingly trains mice to be a better spirit blacksmith. He's very bad at it. He doesn't know how to really like feel the heart of the sword, which is an element that exists at the beginning of this game. And I had forgotten about because I took too long to play the game. And I was like recapping some stuff, like looking at some Let's Plays. And I was like, wait, the game like never does that. After a certain point, it stops talking about like speaking to the souls inside the spirit, the swords.
No way, the game drops this?
It kind of just drops the whole idea that like until the very end. It comes up at the very end, but it's not really doing anything with it for the rest of the game. you're doing the forging, but the forging, like the story never really like connects to this idea that the swords have like personalities or something, which is kind of what is like established at the beginning.
And why, I mean, like, are you training to forge eventually, like, with the character that you're dating? Like, how does that work? Do you just, like, forge on your own?
So maybe a good time to explain how that mechanic works. But I guess I should just note, there's a somewhat standard, like, JRPG party system going on here, and you get into random battles, which I'll talk about, right? So you got weapons, and you need to use those to fight in those battles. So your characters can level up with experience points, standard stuff, but that leveling up, as far as I can tell, affects, I think it affects their like HP, and they have like a, like, I'm forgetting if it's called MP, but it's like your magic, right? It's what lets you use spells. And I think those kind of go up with, and I think maybe your defense goes up with your leveling up, but as far as I can tell, your attack doesn't increase, or if it does, it doesn't increase by very much. In order to increase your attack, you have to upgrade that character's weapon, which is not always a sword. Different characters are different kind of, they're not officially classes, but you know, they're effectively different classes with different weapon types. And in order to forge a sword, you walk up to like an like a forge and sort of anvil, which they exist like in every town. Just like there's always an inn, there's always a forge, and or like a smithy, I guess. And you walk up to it and then select a girl who you want to forge with, and then you select the weapon that you want to forge with, and you have to spend. There's like a currency called elemental I think it's called MP, actually. I think I'm mixing up the MPs here, but there's one that is like a currency that you spend, and there's another one that is like the, you know, the actual just magic power for each character. So you spend that in order to forge. And there's like also a mood element where characters, I never really had it explained to me, but I was reading a walkthrough which explained some of it. And like, I think the better that their mood is, it's like represented as like four quadrants of a heart. The better their mood is, the cheaper it is in terms of how much resources you have to spend to forge with them. And then the girl you pick to forge has an elemental attribute that gets passed to the sword. So like one girl will be fire, one girl will be earth. And they also, at different levels of intimacy with each girl, which is dependent on actions you take like dating them, as you go up the intimacy levels, it unlocks new spells and sometimes special attacks that get imparted to that weapon when you forge it. But they weirdly only get unlocked at specific levels. So if you like level up twice for the intimacy, then you skip the first level, and you know if you don't forge in between, you don't get that spell.
So you gotta make sure that you don't forge too hard, right?
No, forging too hard is fine. It's dating too hard. Like date then forge, like every time you level up. Yeah,
date forge. Okay, not a sex thing, but I can work with it.
that's right. Yeah, so basically, like, and you can date all the girls, and disappointingly, I'm gonna spoil this game. I'm not doing a separate spoiler section. Disappointingly, as far as I can tell, you don't even really end up with anybody at the end of the game, but like, I mean, you kind of end up with Sedina, but I don't think it's really official. But like, as far as I can tell, the dating you can't like pick one of the girls and end up with them. It doesn't change the ending or anything. It's entirely a mechanic for upgrading your swords.
Oh no, they dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, so I mean, that's getting into some of the dating, but that's basically the way the forging works. So that's what I mean by like, you know, if you want to upgrade your attack power, you need to be forging. And I guess you don't need to be dating because the attack power goes up as I think it's based on the level of the character, not the girl you date with, like the you forge with. But dating the girls unlocks new spells that you can add to. So like a bunch of spells that are kind of like table stakes for a JRPG are locked behind that. So like if you want to have healing, like, you know, you want to shoot a fireball, like you need to date girls and then forge with them to unlock
those. That seems pretty important.
Yeah. Weirdly, those spells are attached to the sword. It's kind of a weird metaphor. Like, right? Heal is a spell that you forge into your sword.
So like we just have somebody who's like basically a cleric, but they're still armed with the sword just because the sword has like all the healing stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's another element of this is like, I guess I'm skipping ahead in my intended order here, but like there are not differences between these characters that are really noticeable because the spells are attached to who you forge with, not to the characters. So everybody can learn every spell. There's no spells that's like locked into specific characters. There are some special attacks that are locked into specific characters and specific combinations of them and the girl that you forge with, which is not explained. There's no theming to that. It's not explained why that is. They're just arbitrary. Like sometimes you'll date a girl and show up to forge and it'll be like, now, because you dated her, you can give this other guy a special attack. It's like, okay, I guess it's just like an arbitrary thing.
Well, no, I mean, that sounds perfectly all right because Final Fantasy was already doing this sort of thing where like they just threw classes out the window. There are characters that are better suited for having certain skills, but it was basically like, yeah, everybody can just learn everything if you so please.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I was surprised by it, but I don't know like what the precedent in JRPGs.
Well, how many playable characters do you have in the game?
You end up having, I should have written this down. You have, I should just list them because I have a list here of the characters, and this is as good a time as any to just describe all of the party members. So there's Mice, who's horny main character. Sedina becomes your first party member, and she is nice, I guess.
Childhood best friend.
Not childhood best friend. You meet her at the beginning of the game, but like, you know, Mice didn't know her beforehand. She's like the nice, kind of like well-bred, you know, girl,
friendly neighbor girl.
Magic. Yeah, she's like a pretty solid healer because she has a lot of magic power, but not a lot of like attack and defense. But honestly, again, everybody's like, she's fine. You could actually put her like up and attack. It's everybody's kind of similar. Then you meet Muza, who is like an old friend of Mice's, and Muza's like, these are all kind of stereotypes. Muza's like the kind of tanky, you know, armored tall guy, right? And would be the coolest guy in the party, except unlike Mice, he has the opposite problem, which is that he like freezes up around women and can't talk to them.
Never horny.
Right. The never horny guy. Then Wina or Weena, I forget how they say it. I think it's Wina, but she's the daughter of like a pirate, and she wears a fake eye patch, which she mentions at one point. It's like, sometimes I swap the eye patch to the other eye. Does it for cosmetic reasons. And she is scantily clad and kind of tomboyish and uses like a hammer. And she's kind of like, yeah, she's like tomboy, very boisterous. Soshi, who's just a samurai. Okay, there's samurai in this, and he's also horny. I was a little confused like why they need to have another guy who's horny, but he's also like, he has a thing of being, unlike Mice, who's like horny, kind of obnoxiously horny, Soshi is sort of tries to do like a sob story the few times you see. He doesn't do very much in this story, but the few times you see him try to hit on women, he's like, oh, I'm so sick, my poor constitution, you need to help me. Like, he's just trying to do a sob story. There's Kylene, who is she's like, her thing is she's poor and she wants money. And so she's like obsessed with money. She used to be from like this family that used to be in charge of the city. And then they got kicked out and she got like sent to live in the slums, and she's obsessed with money. And Nelsha, who speaks in the fucking third person, cannot stand it. And she's like kind of nerdy and weird and like airheaded. She's kind of the Osaka of the gang. She wears glasses and she is a dressmaster.
All right.
A lot of different things get happening.
What's
here.
What's going on?
That don't seem to connect to each other. And that means, this is so strange, this is like a kind of funny idea that is, like many ideas, it's thrown in here and then barely used, which is, she is sort of like studying to be a fashion designer, and she like makes dresses, and when she wears the dresses, they have different personalities that possess her when she wears them. So she has a sort of lunch launch style situation going on, where she like wears a dress and she turns into like this angry lady instead of being this like weird Osaka style character. That's Osaka from Azumanga Daioh for the children listening. So that's the party. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I guess. All
right, and how many can you use in a battle at one time?
All right. I'm glad you asked, David, because I was about to get to this, and this is where things start to break down. You can use 3 in battle at any given time, but there is a front line and a back line, which I think exists in some other games. In this case, what that means is you have one character in the front line who is doing the attacking, and 2 characters in the back line who cannot do attacks. They can only use items and like healing spells or other kind of like passive spells. And you can only do 1 action for the front line and 1 action for the back line each turn, so to speak. But it's like a semi-real-time thing where each action has like a, I guess it's like Pokemon and I'm sure some other games, there's like speed effectively, like some actions are faster or slower and it like ticks down and then you press the button to activate the thing. So you could, as I sometimes did, you can sometimes like bank it up and then activate it later. You don't have to activate it the moment the timer ticks down. But there's basically only 2 timers. There's the front line and the back line, and it's the same for the enemy team as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I'm thinking maybe it's important for everybody to be able to learn everything, because I think the idea might have been like, well, some people might only want to use like these 3 characters.
Right. I think it's like a bit of a, I'm really not a fan of this whole setup, like when it all comes together. And I think it might be like a self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing, because here's my issue is there's like very little sort of expressiveness to the combat, right? Because you only have two slots of actions that you can do at any given time, like there's just very little creativity, because effectively you never want to do anything except attack in the front line and heal in the back line. And so it doesn't matter who's there. Like it's just, the only things that matter are like the stats, like, okay, how many hits can they take? How much health do they have on the front line? And then in the back line, like how much, I mean, they can sometimes get hit by attacks. So there's a little bit of a, you know, HP and defense and stuff. And then there's just like, how much magic power do they have to spend on healing? But like, there's a million other spells that I tried and it was like, why would I ever use these? Like, why would I waste an attack trying to like put someone to sleep or something? Cause like Pokemon, frustratingly, like that rarely seems to work very well. And it just like wastes a move. And because you only have the front line and the back line slots, you never have the ability to say like, well, I'm going to keep attacking with this person, but I'm going to like put them to sleep with this other person. So you're always wasting an attack to do something that's like has a 50% chance of working, right?
Wait, why does it only have a 50% chance of working?
I'm saying if you use like a spell, like a lot of the spells just aren't very effective. Like I find they often fail.
Oh no.
Or they don't do as much damage as a melee attack. And so it's
like, oh no, okay, the spells are lame.
Melee attack. Yeah, basically.
Why is it always like this in like a bunch of RPGs where it's like you get a bunch of spells that should be useful and then you actually try to put them into practice and it's like, no, they're bad for, I don't know, like apparent balance reasons? Because I get the feeling like every time that the enemy wants to use a spell, it's like, oh man, my party's almost wiped.
Yep. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah, the specials are okay. But again, I never felt like I was really making important choices. Like it was just always like, whether I won or lost was just based on, did I grind enough earlier to endure this battle? Like it wasn't, you know, the only choices were like, I guess it's again, grinding. It's just, did I upgrade enough? Like, do I have enough spells, right? Like, enough healing spells, the only real spells that seem to be worth using, or cure. Cure is also useful for if someone gets poisoned or something. But that's also effectively just a healing spell. Yeah. And I think, like that combined with the everyone can learn the same spells, it's just like, what's the strategy here? Like, why do I have a samurai? What's the point of having him here?
Like, samurai should have like more samurai like skills, right? Than everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, the only reason to switch characters out for me was if like I was running low on magic power or potions and a character who I would prefer to use was running low on health. And it was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just throw someone else in the front line instead. But basically, the only strategy that seemed to be worth doing was for regular enemies, most of the time just do Muza because he can take a lot of hits and does a lot of damage and just heal him from the back. And then for bosses, do Mice because Mice can unlock through the story. He unlocks these, I think they're called elemental spirits, and they're like special attacks where he summons a big creature and it's a sort of cinematic thing and it does a lot of damage, right? So for bosses, it tends to be effective to do that. But again, it's just attack. And this is a thing I'm frustrated about with a lot of JRPGs, though I've heard later JRPGs have improved on this. But like, you just, when you're attacking, you're also getting attacked. Like there's not really a way to avoid getting hit. You just have to hit and then get hit back, and you're just punching them and they're punching you.
That's RPGs, Evan.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I've heard people say there are some games have introduced like dodging and other mechanics that allow you to potentially avoid hits if you're good enough.
I guess like the only game that I liked that had that sort of mechanic was Paper Mario, where you could duck.
Oh yeah, people mentioned that.
Yeah, you could duck and like cut some of the damage on it. I think Mario RPG had like just a straight up dodge mechanic that was pretty reliable if you were good at it, but you also had almost like no context clues for like doing it. It was more of like just a timing thing. Oh yeah, and also there's I'm forgetting. You played Mother 3.
No, I played the first two. I haven't played 3.
Okay, Mother 3 has like the most involved, like I think it's a dodge or it might be an attack, but it does like do like a rhythm game thing that you have to guess based on the music. It's weird. I don't remember if it was for dodging though, but
yeah,
I don't know. But then there's like a lot of RPGs now that like they feel like they are just real time action games and you can just like move out of the way. But there, why are they still RPGs though? Like, why are you still picking commands out of a menu?
For me, it's not about real time versus turn based, and like, I don't, this is not exactly maybe the most like solid criticism of Thousand Arms here, because I think this is pretty true of a lot of other games in this genre, right? But it's, for me, it's not about that like turn based thing. It's about, I feel like, as someone who is used to playing more kind of action games, if I get hit, it should be because I made a mistake, right? But it seems like in this kind of game, getting hit is just what you have to do to hit the enemies, right?
You get hit because it's an epic battle between you and the forces of evil, and sometimes you're going to get hit. That's just it. That's life. In the JRPG.
I mean, right. So to be clear, like I guess my experience in action games and stuff is like, I'm going to get hit too, because I'm not perfect, right? Like, and I'm not saying I want games where I don't get hit. It's just, I prefer games where me getting hit was the result of a choice I made, right?
No, it was a choice that the enemy made.
Or a choice, yeah, or a failure of a choice I made, right? I missed something. I made a mistake. And I would want the game to be difficult enough that I am frequently making mistakes, right? Because that makes things interesting.
I don't know, Evan. That's the rule set for this sort of game.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it makes sense. But basically, the fact that like the spells aren't very effective, and you don't have flexibility to like, you know, sort of multiplex things and be like, okay, I'm gonna queue up two different spells or something, right? So there just ends up not being a lot of choices other than just get hit and hit back harder and just heal every hit that you get. So I just found the combat very boring.
All right. Well, I mean, all right. It's all right. I don't know. It's just like, I think for me, like the RPG design is like more about, are you managing your resources well enough? Like, have you developed your characters? Can you survive these number of hits? But I don't know. I played like way more RPGs than you, so.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that does match with what I was getting from it, which is it's not really about what you do in the battles, which, you know, I'm not a fan of that because I'm spending so much fucking time in the battles that I would like the things I do in the battles to matter.
I mean, it matters, but it's like, individual action in a turn, like, that doesn't matter as much as the result. And like, the result is, did you just not die during the sequence of turns?
Okay.
I don't know how else to explain this in a way where it's like, you can turn around and be like, oh, it all makes sense. Cause I think fundamentally you just don't like it. You just don't like the idea.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm not a big fan of JRPGs, even the ones that I played, while I liked elements of them. Like, I don't think I, as a kid, I really liked Pokemon. So I guess that's true. But you know, I played more recent Pokemon games and I don't like those turn-based combat systems. I didn't like a lot of the combat and like the grinding that I had to do in the Mother games, even though the Mother games, like Pokemon, are very charming and fun for lots of other reasons. So I might just not like JRPGs, but you know, I haven't played some of the really famous ones either. So,
well, let me tell you right now, you're going to get hit a whole lot and you're going to like it or else.
Yeah. In like a Final Fantasy, right? There are dungeons in this. I didn't mention them yet, but, yeah, for each kind of section, you end up usually doing some sort of dungeon and fighting a boss at the end. The dungeons, I think, like a lot of this type of JRPG, are mazes with random encounters in them. So there's a lot of like dead ends and tricky things that are, you know, set up to make you think that's the right way, and then you waste a bunch of time going down that route. Again, I'm gonna sound like the JRPG hating grump here. I think the mazes are fine. That's, you know, classic maze design is like tricking you into going down a dead end. I really don't like random encounters. Especially, it's one thing to have random encounters like just, you know, on your way to the next town, but to have them in a maze where the game is deliberately being like, hey, you got tricked into going down this, and and you can't like clear out the enemies. It's not, you know, not like, okay, you made a mistake and so you got hit by an enemy, you cleared them out and now you're good. It's like, no, now you just have to go back the way you came and do more random encounters because the enemies will never stop. Not a fan of that.
Yeah, I think random encounters have always been divisive because now, yeah, like, I mean, now, like,
it's, I've heard other people complain about it.
Yeah, like now there's so many games where it's like you can actually see the encounter. So if you don't want to fight anything, you just go some other way.
Yeah, you know, I played, we've talked about it before. I'm a big fan of The World Ends With You, which had like encounters that you choose to engage in.
Yeah, you could program your own like encounter rate, right? Something like that. Yeah.
You also, like, I think you either pick the enemies or sometimes they come at you, but you have a way of, like, sort of short-circuiting that and being like, oh, I don't want to combat right now, so you can stop it.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I also just found, for me, one of the things that was frustrating was this game is just slow, which I think is true of a lot of games of this era, and the maze combined with the random encounters combined with the slow combat... I didn't realize this until I found how to do fast forward on my emulator on my Steam Deck. But when I started fast forwarding, I realized just how much context I was losing every time when I was like trying to navigate a maze of like identical looking passages. And it was like, okay, I could navigate this maze if I was able to continuously walk around the maze. But then I get interrupted by a maybe not 5 minutes, but maybe like a 3 minute fight or 2 minute fight. And then I zoom back out and I'm like, I don't remember which way I was walking.
Oh no, Evan's bad at directions. Oh no.
Well, look, I'm good at directions in real life where there's actual landmarks and things, but a lot of these mazes like are just identical looking. It's just a bunch of rocks and it's hard to remember which way I was walking because each room looks the same as the last room.
Yeah, isn't that a limitation of the PlayStation?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of games on the PlayStation where it is just repeating hallways. I feel like they might have tried to do something with the layouts of these things, but they all end up just looking the same.
Yeah, I mean, the landmarks would help a lot, right? Just making each room feel like its own thing, and then you're like, oh, I was in this room, and then I was in that room.
See, this is why I liked when RPGs were like using the pre-rendered background, because then you have like a whole selection of art assets that you can use, because it's just a flat image, and the the geometry that your character is moving in, you don't see it. You just see it like kind of on top of the image that was already rendered for you. Yeah, but then you have like an environment like in here where it's like being actively generated by the PlayStation. So yeah, so like that takes up probably just a lot of the capability of actually being able to render something unique in the area.
And I didn't mention before, this is a kind of hybrid 2D, 3D game. So it's 3D environments, as David was alluding to there. And 2D sprites. So when you're walking around in the overworld or in dungeons, you're a little like super deformed
little guy
sprite. And then, yeah, you're a little guy. And then it's a 3D world, which I think doesn't look very good. But of course, all the reviews at the time are like, it looks great. Like, this is really, you know, showing what the capabilities of the PlayStation.
Look, put a little 3D in front of people in the late 90s and everybody was like automatically saying, like, at least a 7 out of 10.
And okay, I'm being really hard on this game, but here's where I will say some nice stuff about it. The sprites, the super deformed sprites, okay, first off, they're fine. I think they're kind of cute. The sprites in the combat are really, really nice. I don't know if you watched any of the videos of that. Like, I'm really into them. Like, I think the enemy design is really fun. The characters have fun animations. Like, those are full-size, like, pixel art sprites. And I enjoyed that part of the combat, just getting to see like new wacky enemy types and like their idle animations and attack animations and stuff.
Yeah, it was very colorful. Like at least they knew that they could put their all into that, even if it wasn't going to be environment design.
Yeah, I'm looking through I took a bunch of notes while I played. Pumpkin Mage was one I wrote down that I really liked. It's just like a mage with a pumpkin for a head. Like, there's a lot of fun enemy designs that are just, you know, just one-off enemies you run into. There's one that's like three thieves, it's like hanging out together and they steal stuff from you. Like, that's kind of fun. Yeah, there are anime cutscenes. So there's like kind of full motion video anime scenes which look pretty decent. I was trying to look up who did the animation on this, and as far as I can tell, it seems to be Imagine Co. Limited. It seems to be the 2D animation studio. There's a separate Digimation is credited for 3D animation, I think, for some of those scenes have like some mechanical animation and stuff that's done in 3D, which looks like shit. It's 1998. Well, but the 2D animation looks decent.
Not only is it 1998, all this stuff is getting pushed out at like 240p.
Yeah, it's really chunky. It has like dithering and stuff on it, as you'd expect. One thing that's interesting about this, I don't know how common this was at the time, but it's kind of awkward, but I appreciate the attempt, is that they try to maintain, whenever possible, maintain the continuity of the environment. So when you switch from the gameplay into most of the cinematics, except for some of the really big ones where they switch to like full motion video stuff, it does this thing where the sprites are on screen and then the camera sort of like swoops around and like basically like it'll zoom and pan and kind of move the characters off screen for a second or two and then like zoom back in. And it does that so that when it zooms back in, they are now like anime, right? They're like full body animation that's superimposed on top of the environment at like a new angle to match the angle that the animation was drawn at. So it's kind of awkward, the transition, but I appreciate the attempt there, which is to try to like not cut into a cinematic, but actually have it exist in the same environment.
That's a lot of extra work for where like I think a lot of other titles would simply just throw a sprite on top with like all the characters there, like all the 3D characters just standing around.
Right. I mean, you know, some of the dialogue is done that way, but when there's like a big scene, I mean, like when Jabal dies at the beginning, it does that zoom in and then you get like, you know, full characters with Jabal like lying on the ground and Mice and Sedina standing over him doing, you know, animation and acting and stuff. It's kind of cool. I mean, you know, it's like a funny limitation thing because now you don't need to do that at all in most games because the environment looks like the cinematic, right? I guess that's not all games. There's still a lot of games that will do, I guess not full motion video, but they'll do cinematics that are rendered in a different scene from the gameplay, right?
Persona 5 will just do anime cutscenes, and those anime cutscenes look worse than the game.
That sucks. Yeah, I think I covered some, you know, the basics of the combat. How about dating? We haven't talked
about
dating.
Who's your favorite?
Okay, well, that's...
Oh, that might be a Patreon question, actually.
Actually, let's save that. It's a Patreon question. It's like, who's best girl? Yeah, yeah. Or maybe not a patron, but a listener question. I'll double check when we get there. So here's how dating works. Badly. Not a fan of this dating mechanic. Even a little bit, I think. Maybe, not even a little bit. So you have to go to like a goddess statue thing. I think it's not called that. That's what it's called in Zelda, but it's something like that. It's effectively like the goddess statues in Zelda. And they're in every town. You walk up to them and then it says, date a girl? And you say yes. And then you get a choice of date, mini game, or present, I think, are the three. I forget if that's exactly what they're called, or gift or something. So I guess I'll start with the other two. Before I do date, present is simple. You know, and this is like Fire Emblem has this, lots of stuff has this. Like, you can buy and find gifts that are like items that you can't use for anything useful except for dating, and you can give them to girls, and that's it, right? And then they might like it or hate it. And that seems to, from what I could test with some save states, seems to determine like how much their intimacy level goes up. And you know, there are some that do seem like they're designed specifically for characters. Like there's a girl, oh, I haven't gotten into this, a town girl, as they're called, which is a girl who's not in your party who you can date, which exists in this. So you can date the girls in your party as well as like some girls that exist in other towns or just in towns you pass through. So there's one girl who's like, she dresses like a frog and she's like weird. She's kind of like the Kaidun of this game.
See, here I thought you were like setting me up to like tell me about like, oh, you know, I know this girl, right? Like this girl in town. I was like, oh, it's going to be like some sort of sexy anime girl.
No, she's kind of the best girl. She's like this wacky scientist who dresses like a frog, but she can't join your party, unfortunately. So you can find an item that's called Frog Book.
Frog book.
unclear exactly. I don't know if there was a full enough description for me to know what exactly that is, but I gave it to her and she was like, oh my God, I was looking for this book. And it's like, yeah, I figured you're dressed like a fucking frog. How could I have possibly known that you wanted the frog book? So I think, you know, there's like ones that are designed specifically for specific characters. I know Fire Emblem Three Houses had that, I remember, where I had to like suss out who wanted what gifts.
Oh man, I think Three Houses was maybe the game that had like the gifts that made the most sense, because sometimes like I'll see this sort of thing pop up in other games and it'll be like, I wouldn't have known this unless I looked it up.
I thought it was good in Three Houses, because you know enough about their personalities to actually figure it out.
Yeah.
It felt like a genuine puzzle, right? Where, like, you wouldn't just look it up.
I think the item itself, like, also would have, like, some clues in the text for it.
Mm.
So, it was, like, generally helpful all around. It wasn't, like, so obvious, like, oh, it's, like, in my face, like, how obvious it was. But it was at least, like, you know, if I made a mistake, I would feel a little bit dumb. Like, I probably should have just thought a little bit harder about it.
So, that's presents. Mini games is every girl has a different mini game that you can play.
Those mini games.
Not a fan. I mean, some of them are a little fun, I guess, but it's just they are such different games from what you're playing here. So, you know, some of them will be like these memory games where like you have to press the face buttons on the PlayStation to match the ones that are pressed in the like the prompt. There's one that's like shoot ghosts while the girl walks around a 2D environment and like don't shoot her and don't let her get hit by the ghosts. There's one that's like there's probably a term for this type of mini game, but like one of those things where it's like pops up different things that you have to kind of hit, but like sometimes it's something you're not supposed to hit. Does that make sense?
It's like the arcade games.
Like a shooting gallery, I guess, but it's not a shooting gallery. It's all mapped to the face buttons and the D-pad, but it's the same idea. It's like, you know, a ghost shows up on the up button and you press up, right?
Yeah, not the most inspired selection of minigames that I've heard.
Oh, wait, the girl who loves money, her minigame is just blackjack.
Nice, there you go. That's a game that I can get behind.
That's kind of funny. It's like literally just blackjack. It's pretty funny. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of these. I played them like once per girl. I think there's a few I didn't play it for, but you know, I tried to play them at least once just to see what they were. But honestly, it just turns out dating was the most effective way to get everybody's intimacy up. So that's what I spent more of my time doing. So dating. Here's how it works. You take them on a date and then they're walking around with you. And you don't do anything interesting. You can turn like they trail behind you while you're on a date with them, and you're like locked inside the town, so you can't like leave or do anything else. And you can talk to them, but all they do is go, "Hurry up! Where are we going on a date?" And so then you go to a location, and there's like preset locations that are date spots where the game will ask you if you want a date when you get there, and nothing tells you what they are. I did notice one time some NPC dialogue told me like, oh, I hear the best date spot in this town is this place. And I was like, oh, that's neat. Why did I never hear anybody else do that? So I wonder if maybe I missed it in some other towns, but that seems like a cool idea, is that you could pick it up from talking to NPCs of like, oh, here's a good date spot. And I think some of them might be better than others. Like maybe they have a higher effect on the intimacy increase or something if you do a date there.
So you'd have to talk to like every NPC when you get into a town and hope that you figure out where the best spot to go is.
Yeah, and I tend to talk to every NPC anyway, and I didn't notice them mentioning it very much, so that's unfortunate. So then you go to the date spot, and it triggers a like, you know, visual novel style dialogue scene. So then it's like a kind of head and shoulders shot of the character with the full anime art. And you talk to them, and look, haven't played maybe any dating sims proper, so I don't really know what these things are like, but I'll tell you what this one is like and why I'm not not into it. Sorry, fat drunk friend otaku, for you know, I'm being a little bit down on this game that you recommended I play. But it is a series of questions with two answers to each one, and the questions are basically just... Not basically. They are random.
Oh, no.
I think sometimes there are pre-programmed like follow-ups that they can ask, but the questions are pretty much random. So they will just ask you a question, then you answer, and there is a good answer and a bad answer. Or maybe, I think sometimes there's like, maybe they're both neutral or something like that. But generally there's a good and a bad answer. And then they ask you a different unrelated question. And they just keep doing that.
This sounds like the worst date ever.
It does. It's not, in real life, it would be a horrible date. And in the game, it is not a fun time either. Sometimes you get a thing at the end, if the date goes well, where they let you ask them a question. And that can also, that's like a little more interesting because there's like maybe five choices. And at least I once or twice I had one of those have a negative reaction from them. So that was kind of interesting that like the question you ask could be bad, right? So you have to think about it. And, you know, it's a chance to maybe get to know the character better. So it's kind of interesting. Like you get some somewhat unique questions that you can ask them. That part's okay. But man, these questions are so, there's no flow to the dialogue, you know, it's just... And I think that's because, like, I guess it's like a, maybe not a technical limitation, but a limitation for like how much work you would have to put in for not just for dating all these girls, but for the fact that dating is a necessary mechanic for unlocking spells, which means you have to do a lot of it. And so that would mean a lot of like unique dialogue to write for every level of the dates. And the fact that like you can go down a level. So then what happens? You redo the same conversation, you know? So I feel like this was like a half measure of like, well, we can't write every possible permutation of this. So let's just write a bunch of questions and then shuffle them every time you go on a date.
I mean, you could, there's definitely more graceful ways to design this sort of thing as opposed to just having like a mechanic with like a bunch of randomly generated selections.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I was going to read a couple of them because I have the walkthrough open, which has the full, and God bless this person, like they wrote out every single option and which one is better. okay, so this is Nelsha, who's the one who speaks in third person. what's going to happen to us? And then you can answer, I'll be with you, or I bet that we'll be happy, which is the best one. Some of them are like that, where they're arbitrary, and it's like, I don't know which one is better, right? And there's not really much evidence for, in terms of the character, that one would be better. Nelsha feels dizzy, unrelated to anything. She can just randomly say she's dizzy. And then you can say, are you okay? Here, hold on to me. Or you can say, are you okay? Great, let me hold you. That's an example. A lot of them are set up like that, which is, there's like a nice one and a horny one, and you're not supposed to do the horny one.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least the game has that down.
To its credit, sometimes with some characters, you are rewarded for being horny and penalized for not being horny because she'll call you on your bullshit. Because particularly, I think with Kyleen, who I found was the most interesting one mechanically to date, because she was like a little unpredictable. And like I found myself thinking about the character's personality more of like, oh, she might react a little differently from the other girls.
Somebody who's got a little bit more going on than the others.
Yeah. And she, once or twice, I would get a bad reaction if I tried to be nice. And I tried safe stating it, and I would get a good reaction if I said, like, if she said, like, one of the questions, which I don't have right in front of me, but it's like, if you were on a deserted island, what would you take with you? And for most girls, the right answer is you, or my love for you, or something. But with, and you can say, I would take a bunch of beautiful girls, right? And like, that's always going to be a bad answer for most of the girls you date. But for Kyleen, I think if you say the first one, she goes like, oh, you're faking me or whatever, right? And if you say the beautiful girl, she's like, well, that's the way you are. And like, that's the good answer, right? And it's like, oh, all right, that's kind of fits her character because she's like the most cynical of the girls, right? So I was like, oh, that kind of works. I wish the game had way more of that, like where the questions were tied more into the personalities.
Yeah, and I guess if you're not like a blank slate character, right? Like you're already a character with some established personality traits. So maybe the horny answers would be the ones to go for if like you want to be like more honest, right? That's a good quality, right? Being honest about your own hornishness.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. I guess for Kyleen it is.
Yeah, some will be more receptive to that.
It's kind of unpredictable. Like eventually I got to a point where I wasn't dating enough in this game. And so my weapons were underpowered for the final boss. And then, oh my God, would you believe how much I was fast forwarding and save stating to just like plow through a million dates and get to like pump up my weapon power. The way you can fail the dates and they like storm out and get mad at you. And that's if you, there's like an invisible meter that tracks like how happy they are with you. And basically every time that you get the good answer, you know, the meter goes up, and then when you get a bad answer, it goes down. So if you have enough bad answers in a row without good ones to even them out, then like you hit zero and then you die and your date ends. And then if you stay, I guess, above a certain threshold, it seems like there's a threshold that's like fine. And then it's like the date ends and she goes, thanks, hope to see you again. Right. And then there's like a really positive one where they have some goofy line where they're like, I had a really good time. Like, it's like some weird, the voice acting.
Oh, no, it's voice acted too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all voice acting, which, you know, I guess kind of impressive. Right. And then you get a kiss at the end, which is the same for if you give a really good present, and there's like an animation of them like kiss the anime girl kissing you, kissing the screen, like, yes.
So 1,000 arms isn't correct. It should be 1,000 dates.
Yeah, you got to go on a lot of dates. Because I was like, oh, I'll try out the dating thing. And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
This integral
like,
part.
You're expected to be dating a lot so that you're strong enough for combat. Because I got near the end and I realized the walkthrough kept saying like, use heal all in this fight. And I was like, I don't have heal all. And it's like, oh, because I'm like 3 levels under where like Kylene gives you heal all. I was like, oh, I gotta go on a bunch of dates with this girl. Okay.
Yeah, but the thing with RPGs is like when they present to you some sort of game mechanic that is gonna have like a direct effect on your skills and stuff, it's a really good idea to engage with that mechanic.
I've noticed that. I remember when we talked about Pokemon, I had the same thing where it was like I was underleveled in an otherwise easy game because I think it was like a lot of the, I think it was particularly those things, I can't remember what they were, those like weird encounters that appeared in like the overworld in Sword and Shield that you were expected to be doing a lot of. And I was like, ah, oh, this shit's boring. And I didn't do it. And it's like, oh, I'm underleveled.
You mean like the online cooperative Pokemon battles where you could fight like a really big Pokemon?
It was the big Pokemon.
And they would give you like a ton of experience items?
Yeah, I wasn't doing that because it was like, because I find Pokemon combat boring. Oh. So I was underleveled.
Yeah, like you do, honestly, you did like 10 of those and you would have been just set for the whole game.
Yeah, yeah. So same kind of thing with finding the dating boring. And then I had to go in and really spend a lot more time dating all the girls. So yeah, like I mentioned, there's a set of town girls. I think there's maybe 4 or 5 of them in addition to the party girls, which is not
party girls,
not like party girls.
Party girls.
I didn't date all of the town girls. I didn't find all of them. I wasn't really clear on how I was supposed to find them. Like, but I dated a couple of them. I dated the frog girl and then this like kind of older woman who has some kind of weird, I mean, she's probably not that old, but she's portrayed as being like, you know, more mature, which means she's probably like 17 or something. but like I did like 1 or 2 dates with her, and yeah, she was kind of, it was a little creepy because like a lot of her dialogue was about how like she reminds Mice of his mom, and I was like, oh, we need to abort this conversation.
Wow, trying to
fuck your mom, buddy.
Does he know who his mom is?
I think he does, but you don't see her. I don't think you see her in the game. You do see your dad, and you meet him again later after all the like your town burns down, and I couldn't remember if it was like if the dad was missing, but you just run into him. It's kind of like a gag partway through. You're at like a train station and he's like, oh hey, how you doing? And he's like with a woman. And he's like, yeah, I got a lady here I'm going on a date with, good luck with the saving the world stuff. He's like a very carefree dad is the kind of vibe they're going for. Yeah, I didn't really talk about like a lot of the individual story stuff, but you have to go around you know, there's a bunch of little sub quests within the main quest. The main quest is, I didn't even talk about this. You have to kind of rekindle and get these powers from the sacred altars, which have they have these flames that are, it's all connected to like, that's like the power that's used for the elemental power that's used for forging weapons. And these dark acolytes are trying to seize these sacred altars. And so you go to the sacred altars and then you get their power and you use it to fight the dark acolytes. And the big bad is this guy called the Emperor, or like the Dark Emperor, I think. And this is when I was most deeply regretting playing the dubbed version. It's one of the places where I was regretting it, I guess. This voice actor, who I probably should have looked up what his name was, he is trying very hard. He's putting a lot of work in on this character. And basically, he is chewing the scenery as the Dark Emperor. He does like this deep voice, and he goes like, "We are going to take the flame of the light."
Oh, he's going all in.
"Replace it with the flame of darkness." And every time he says darkness, he does that. He pauses and goes, "Darkness." It's pretty painful to listen to. Literally, like, even in lines of dialogue that are not particularly dramatic, he's not like, you know, it's not the end of a sentence or something. He's just saying the word darkness in the middle of it, and he pauses and does the full elongated darkness. And basically, there's this thing going on by the end of the game that gets emphasized more, which I was just not bought into at all. Of like, there are two clans. There's the clan of the darkness and the clan of the light. The Emperor keeps talking about, and he's trying to bring the powers of them together so that he can become a god. Asterisk, you do fight God at the end of this. He becomes a god, and then you fight him. So the JRPG prophecy is fulfilled. And I just, this kind of stuff, just like the souls and the sword kind of thing, there's like a mythology to this that just never really connected for me. It's just characters in cinematics will say things about proper nouns, and then I never really felt like it connected to anything I was doing in any real way. I didn't really feel like I understood what the difference between the clan of the light and the clan of the darkness was, and what their goals were, other than the clan of the darkness is just bad guys.
I don't know why I'm getting like Garzy's Wing vibes.
It is kind of Garzy's Wing vibes. Like, the individual, like, characters in your party have storylines that have a certain level of coherence to them. And, like, you know, some of the specific, you know, sub-quests you have to do where characters need help with things in the town and you do them. Some of that stuff makes sense. But I just, this larger story was just, it felt like a placeholder for where there was supposed to be some more cosmology there.
Yeah, it sounds like there was a whole story inside like the creator's head. It just didn't come out in the game, but there's elements of it in there, aren't there? Right. There's a guy who's really, really keen on darkness, huh?
He loves darkness, but he's also trying to use the power of both is kind of the thing. He's trying to do this like synthesis of them, which felt like it. There was potential there, but it barely gets explored. There is a character who's like a rival who you meet early on, who's like an apprentice of Jobble, and then turns on him. And he's from the clan of darkness and has a whole existential crisis about, like, you know, he sort of wants to be good, but feels like he can't be because he's from the clan of darkness. And I was like, okay, potentially interesting, but I've never met someone from the clan of darkness. I don't know what any of this means. I have nothing to hang this on, you know? It's not like I went to their town and like had a subplot where I learned about what was going on with this other group of people or something.
So it's just this group that is referred to, but you don't really engage with in any sort of way?
Yeah. And then, like I said, I'm just disappointed with elements that seem mismatched and like they don't have a ton of detail in them. There is like Soshi, who's a samurai, and he has a sister who I never dated, but I think she's a dateable character. And you do visit their country where it's like just Japan. It's like fantasy Japan. But honestly, I barely remember much of the stuff that happened in that, because I think it was just like there's a sort of Japanese swordsmith who you have to help, and it's pretty brief. And then that character Soshi is just not doing very much. The dressmaster stuff with Nelsha is like, I think it's fun. I like launch and lunch in Dragon Ball a lot, and it's a very similar vibe to that. But it's introduced like near the end of the game, and there's not a subplot really around. Like, you have to get her dress back, but it doesn't do much beyond that. It's basically like you get her dress, you do a whole subplot where you have to get her dress. And then she puts it on and she becomes effectively Launch. And then there's a little comedy beat where she argues with the girl who you have to fight, like the boss for that. And then beyond that, the dress stuff, it's not an ability that seems to have any real effect on combat. Like it, you can do it in combat, but I never found it to be very effective. So it's kind of like you can transform her and attack. It's like a spell you can do. So I just never did it, and it never had any more plot significance. Occasionally, it's like once or twice before the end of the game, they do a kind of funny gag where you're talking with the characters and Nelsha... Oh, no, it's not during dialogue. It's during the dates. This is kind of funny. If Nelsha gets mad at you during a date, she turns into the other version of her with the dress on, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, because she's about to do a violence to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it feels mismatched, and I alluded to this before. Outlaw Star, I was a big fan of that growing up, but let me tell you, Outlaw Star is a weird show about, like, what if you had, like, a sort of vaguely cowboy-y guy who's got a spaceship with robot arms, and then his crew consists of, like, Rei Ayanami and a cat girl and a samurai.
Oh, so it's just different elements from other stuff that you are familiar with.
Yeah, and that's what this game feels like. So, you know, it's like not surprised that the Outlaw Star guy is involved here because he's like, oh, what if we had Lunch and Launch and we also had a samurai? We also And it's like steampunk also at the same time. And then you've got like a guy who's like a knight from a fantasy RPG.
All in one unbroken breath. Just imagine like the planning sessions where it's like, okay, what ideas do you have? And it's just like a 5-year-old that has like rattle off everything that they want.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of this. I've complained before about anime that feels this way too, where like they just, it feels like characters from different franchises are all being mashed up together. And sometimes it's fun when you literally mash characters from different franchises together, but I don't like it when they're supposed to exist in the same world and they just, their character designs feel totally disjointed from each other. And all of that. I think that was kind of popular though in the 90s, early 2000s. It was a little popular to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I mean, the fan bases for all that sort of stuff now are like over 40. Some over 30 maybe, but it does feel like a relic from days past.
Yeah, I'm like, just to hang on this for a second, because it's an interesting thing for me from a character design perspective to think about, like, what makes all of this feel disjointed. And I'm thinking about, I think a decent reference point for something like this, that's like a positive reference point, is like Slayers, right? Which I was just thinking about, and I pulled up an image to just look at it. And it's like Slayers, you've got characters with different classes and stuff, right? But they all kind of have robes and things. Like it feels like they all come from the same world.
Yeah, that world is way more, sounds way more coherent.
Yeah. And that's like what's kind of missing here. It's not that everyone needs to like wear a uniform or something, but like they don't feel like they all exist in the same world. You have any questions for me, David, before we move along here?
You gonna play that other RPG that you were talking about? The other one. The one where it's like Japan as imagined by dumb Americans.
Yeah, that's Tengai Makyo. I think I probably should lay low a little bit on the ones that people don't recommend to me and instead play like a Final Fantasy or something.
How are the load times on PlayStation?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's on an emulator, but I didn't notice any really bad load times. I did start fast forwarding in the last like 10 hours or so of gameplay. So I started skipping everything and I realized just how slow everything was when I fast forwarded and realized that at fast forward speed, it was regular video game speed in 2023.
Yeah, sometimes I have like these memories of playing games on the PlayStation that I've completely forgotten about like how long those load times used to be. So like if I'm emulating something, it's usually okay. Although I will still notice like the game will just pause for a bit, right? Like it's doing the loading, but it doesn't have to like, you know, sit there for like a minute. But then if like I have like an actual disc in a PlayStation, then like then I really feel it.
Yeah. I was looking through my notes and something worth mentioning is this game has got some dated references to LGBTQ people. There's a character who's like a kind of gag character who I think is clearly gay coded. And it's a little bit played as a joke. Not a huge fan of him. He's kind of like a kind of this like clownish guy who keeps, he's like a thief who keeps showing up and trying to mess with you, and then you have to fight him multiple times, called Bandager. I'm not sure if he's supposed to be gay coded in the Japanese though, or if it was something they tried to add in the English version. And there's also a line that I am unclear what this was supposed to be, but I think it might be transphobic. And it also could have been added by the English version, but I think it's when, I have this in my notes, I think it's when Nelsha first transforms, someone refers to her wig as a cheap wig, and then it's just written as T hyphen would wear. Not good, I don't think, unless I'm misinterpreting that.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of weird too to censor it. Like, just don't say it. How about that? just try not saying it. Yeah, some other things, something I thought was kind of fun in this game, contrasting with that stuff that I didn't like, is it's kind of got like some intentional anachronisms that I think are a little bit fun. Characters, and like breaking the third or the fourth wall type stuff, where characters will sometimes reference, like you'll talk to an NPC and they'll be like, oh, it's a shame I don't have any voice acting. I guess that's just because I'm a random townsperson, right? And then like characters will sometimes reference like watching TV, which like doesn't exist in this world, right? There is a kind of funny line where you walk into a place called Sharan, pronounced unbelievably as Sharon, like the name, even though it feels like it should be Sharon or something. And it's like a kind of vaguely Middle Eastern style, like floating city. And that's where Kylene is from. And one of the NPCs you talk to when you walk in says, isn't Sharon great? Thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, see, like, yeah, because I think during this time especially, there's like a lot of liberties taken with localization. So maybe some of the stuff was just here, right? Like in the English language version of the game. So I think that if they like ran into something where it's like, oh, well, maybe our English language speaking audience isn't really going to get what's referenced in here and like the Japanese, they would just like straight up just like take it out and replace it with something that maybe people here would probably understand.
Yeah, that makes sense. Another thing I have in my notes here, which was kind of unbelievable to me, is there is a character who's called Ratchet, and she's this kind of like vaguely clown-looking robot who you fight. She's like a boss late in the game, or maybe halfway through, I think. I could not believe this when she starts talking. She talks exactly like Harley Quinn. She's like... And she refers to I think she refers to Schmidt, who's like the rival character who is extremely Chunibyo and refers to himself as the Dark Master. She refers to him as Mr. D. And I'm like, are you kidding? It's literally the Harley Quinn thing. She's doing like the Brooklyn accent and the Mr. J stuff, like... I guess, you know, the Batman the Animated Series was...
Yeah, that was fresh.
Yeah, it was fresh. I think it was... it had finished, maybe, or was...
No, I remember still watching it.
Yeah. It was definitely still on TV. So, yeah, somebody was just like, hey, let's just do that localization for this game. Yeah, there's a lot more stuff in my notes, but maybe we can call it there. Oh, one more for you, David.
A little more for me.
Ayumi Hamasaki did the opening and ending songs, which are like anime style OPs and EDs. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I was pretty struck by that. It has like an anime OP. It has like an animated anime OP sequence. And that stuff's kind of cool. I could totally understand how playing this at the time, if you were like a kid or a teenager who was like watching anime, it would have been kind of cool to be like, oh my God, yeah, I'm playing an anime.
Yeah. It's like, you know, that's full marks on presentation if you can get an anime OP like right out there. Just get it out in front of people.
I did like that. It kind of reminded me, now that I think about it, of we talked about Necro Barista, which has like an anime.
Ooh, it's
OP,
so Shaft
basically. Yeah. All right, well, I think we can move on to some questions, and then I'm going to save my final thoughts for the end, but I think you may have figured out what my final thoughts are here. It's all going to be non-patron questions. But reminder, if you're a patron, you can submit questions anywhere. I mean, you can send them on Patreon. We have a mega thread on there that I update with whatever we're reviewing. And you can also always post in the Discord or on X or wherever else. You can just post at me on like Blue Sky or Mastodon and I'll see it. All right. So let's see. We have some questions about arms here. So Ink asks, was 99 arms not enough? Is there an achievement unlocked for gathering all 1,000 arms? Well, I'm going to start off here by just answering that by giving you some bad news, Ink, which is, I don't know why this is called 1,000 arms. There aren't 1,000 arms.
Well, I did say 1,000 dates, and the product of a date turned out to just be a sword, right? So if you do go on 1,000 dates, you've made this... Essentially, you've made 1,000 arms, I guess?
I really don't know what's going on with this. It is the Japanese title, so that's not like a localized title for it. So maybe it's just because it's a Japanese title that it was like, it sounded cool and they didn't think too hard about it.
It's hyperbole. There's just a lot of arms. It's not necessarily 1,000 of them.
Maybe the arms is trying to refer to weapons. Like, it seems like a possible translation misunderstanding, because I think arms technically can refer to swords, but it doesn't sound like it when you say 1,000 arms, right? But yeah, I think that's what it's supposed to be, is like swords and weapons are so central to it and you're like forging weapons. So that's why it's called 1,000 arms. But it's not like you have 1,000 swords. You don't even, by the way, really find new swords. The only ones you find are, you find like rusty ones, which I only realized too late. You can like fortify them at a sacred altar and then get a stronger sword back. But generally, you're just upgrading the sword that each character starts with. So you're also not collecting weapons. So again, there's not a lot of expressiveness in there. You're not like, it's not a forging and crafting game, right? Where you're like finding weapons and upgrading them and giving them special abilities. You're just like linearly upgrading your character's weapons. Another arms related question. How many arms would you like to have ideally? That's a question from Helen, Wandering Dreamer, on the Discord. David, you can answer this one because it has nothing to do with the video game I just played.
I think having 8 arms would be cool.
I think 8's too many. I think like a man spider situation might work, just without the turning into a giant spider. So like 6 arms.
Now, are they like regular arms, or could I like, you know, upgrade to, you know, bulky, muscular arms? Or am I stuck with like just like 8 different copies of the arms that I got? Because, you know, it's a lot of work to put muscle on arms.
Actually, all right, here's my answer. Not Man Spider. Different Spider-Man character with the same number of arms. Doc Ock. That's the way to go. Two regular human arms, unencumbered, right? Like no extra weird shit on my sides like Man Spider. But then I got the Doc Ock arms coming out the back. Even better, give me the Doc Ock arms from Spider-Verse, which seem like they you know, fit well under her clothes and stuff, like kind of convenient.
Do you want like detachable arms?
That's even better. Maybe I don't need
like
them all.
Your arm backpack, just your backpack that carries a bunch of arms with you.
Yeah. Sounds good. I wish the game was like, I wish that was the game, having lots of arms. also from the Discord, Pancakes asks, who is best girl and why? Good question. David, I want you to look up all the girls and tell me which one is best girl from looking at the pictures. And then I will say based on playing.
Well, I was most interested in the pirate.
That's Wina.
Wina. That's, let me take a look. My keyboard is very loud, Pat. Sorry.
I think all the designs are pretty decent.
Good.
Like, I think the costume designs are not my favorite, but I think like the kind of face and hair designs and stuff I like for most of these characters, including Mice, who I think has a kind of, you know, just a fun looking design.
It's really good.
I think in terms of like overall, I think it's got to be Wina or Kylene. I think like Wina's fun. She's like, she's kind of dumb and hot-headed, right? She gets really mad when like something bad happens to the party. And Kylene is mean, and that's fun. So she's like really mean to Mice at first, and then she's mean on the dates too. And she's always like, take me to a fancy restaurant. Like I find that funny. So if I have to pick though, probably Wina. Wina's like the most fun overall.
I think Nelsha's cute, but you say that she's like weird.
I think Nelsha's design's pretty cute, but she's the talking in third person is a deal breaker for me. Can you imagine how fast I would walk out of a real date if she was talking in the third person?
I mean, it's cute. It's cute in anime, right?
No, it's not. It's annoying. It's annoying in anime, and it would be in real life. It's like she's also, I think, supposed to be like really old. It feels like I don't know if I was supposed to read the manual. Yeah, because she's like, she got like the elf thing going on where she's like really,
oh, 100 years old. Okay.
Yeah, but I felt like I missed something because in the dates she talks about it and I was like, did that get mentioned earlier? And I just like missed it. It's like a one-off piece of dialogue that she's like from a race that lives really long. But she's got the kind of baby wife thing going on, you know? She's like goo goo gaga talking in the third person. So I don't like that.
Yeah, so then we're all team Mina then.
I think mm-hmm. so. She like semi-canonically gets with Musa by the end, which I think is cute because she is like kind of brash and doesn't read the room and stuff. And Musa is like, he's too awkward to do anything. And so it's a cute pairing of like the shy guy with the hot-headed girl. All right. That's who's best girl. Now to get to the sicko questions.
Sicko questions.
Oh, yeah.
We got sicko questions?
We got like four questions from Samantha Ferreira from Anime Herald on Blue Sky. And she is definitely the most obsessed with Sakura Wars person I have ever interacted with. And might be the, you know, maybe is the English language expert on Sakura Wars. So I mentioned there's a Sakura Wars connection here. So her question is, given that this is a project with a concept by Outlaw Stars Takahito Ito, with scripts by Super Sentai icon Junki Takegami, and music by Kazuhito Kikuchi, do you think Oji Hiroi was angling to make Lightning Strike twice after his success with Sakura Wars?
Let me blink like 100 times.
a thousand times. 1,000 blinks.
I had to blink 1,000 times just to be like, I'm sure like, all those names were like fired like straight from the hip, like not even have to like look it up.
So my read on this, and I certainly don't know as much about Oji Hiroi as Samantha does, but my guess would be that this is not like an attempt to, I don't know. I don't see this as a follow up to Sakura Wars, but I think this is probably just his crew, right? It's the kind of game that he makes, and like he brought this team together and yeah, I mean, I think maybe Lightning Strike twice is maybe maybe an extreme way to describe it, but it does sound like it's in the same vein and kind of him following that same interest in like that type of game. Sakura Wars, I think, also has kind of visual novelty elements, right? So
no, I mentioned before we were recording, I mentioned that some of this stuff reminded me of Chrono Trigger, where the idea was to compile a team of not necessarily just like game design people, although I guess in that case it was like mostly game design people, and then Akira Toriyama's name was thrown in there as well. But I like, with RPGs you have to differentiate yourself from the big ones that are gonna sell a million copies out the gate.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's like a shared thing with Sakura Wars, right? Is the idea of making a really anime style RPG.
Like you'll at least maybe get some people based just on, you know, what it looks like.
Yeah. Now there's three more questions that are actually about the details of the game. Two, how long did it take for you to get utterly frustrated by the click, click, click noise Mice makes when he runs? I thought it was kind of cute, actually. I kind of liked that. Hey, notably, I was looking it up. They made changes to the game for the English release. One of them was there's a toggle for in the English release, there's a toggle to walk, to like slow down your walking speed, because you run, you go pretty fast by default. Apparently that's reversed from the Japanese. So they're just like, quality of life, Mice moves too slow. He runs by default and you press the button to walk instead of walking and pressing a button to run. Kind of confusing. It's like, usually it goes the other way around, right? But I thought it's kind of cute. Like, I like those little sprites, and Mice has like, when he walks, I don't know if you saw in the video you watched, like, I like his feet are a little big. So you get nice little walking animation. It's kind of cute. Three, do you have any favorite characters and or dialogue bits? I kind of mentioned favorites are probably, for me, least favorite is like the Dark Emperor and Schmidt, who are just so lame and choony the whole time. And, you know, Mice is a creep, so I don't like that. Dialogue bits. Let me check my notes. I mean, I mentioned the Laputa thing. Did I write down any more fun dialogue? Oh, yeah, not dialogue, but I did think this is unintentionally funny, but some of the lines that characters, that enemies say when they fight are funny. So what Schmidt does when he uses one of his attacks, and this is like the Chuni guy who's your rival, is he goes, "Blade of Darkness, crush the soul." Which is some extremely, extremely Chuni bullshit.
Yeah, that's so hard to take seriously.
He does feel like especially because he's like a good guy who like sees these mean dudes and goes like, "Oh, I want to be like them." He feels so lame. He just doesn't feel like a threat. You know what he is? He's like the Kylo Ren of this game. He's like cosplaying as a bad guy. Let's see. And the last question, what town do you think had the best concept overall and the worst? The worst ones are probably just the ones I don't remember. Like Boysby. Terrible name, by the way. Boysby is the name of one of
where,
the towns.
Where is that? New Jersey.
That's the first town that you're in. Good concepts. There's a few that are good. I do think that's like a neat thing about this game. Just the elevator pitch for some of them is pretty cool. There's the one that Wina is from, which I'm forgetting the name of right now. I think Langood. There's a cool reveal where you get into this pirate fortress, and then you're like, "Oh, you know, we're gonna like take a boat to go somewhere," and they're like, "Oh, we're not taking a boat. We're taking the fortress." And the fortress like separates from the land, and it turns out it is a giant boat. Pretty cool, kind of a Macross-y thing. And that's kind of neat. Like that's a town similar to Macross. It's like, that is a town. It's got like, you know, it has an inn and a smithy and everything inside of it. And you can eventually use it to kind of like to travel, like almost like a horse, like a vehicle or something. It's like you get in it and you travel freely around the ocean. I didn't really mention there's not much exploration though. So it's kind of like freely traveling just helps you get back to towns you went to before, but there wasn't like stuff to find in the overworld that is not like your next objective. That was a cool concept. I know Samantha asked for one, but it's a good opportunity to say some of the ones that were cool. There's Mountain Head, which is similarly a vehicle that has a town inside of it. It's a train. This is a neat concept that I feel like the game didn't use for anything particularly interesting. But basically, there's a region that just has a train running in a loop and then a bunch of towns that are like terminals on the train. And you can either travel to the individual towns or you can get on the train and then like get back off at any of the towns. And the train itself is a town. So you can go in there and that's where you meet the frog.
The train is a town?
Like you go inside of it and it has, you know, it has houses and NPCs and an inn and all that stuff. And you can date inside of it.
The train is a town.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool concept. And then the other one I would shout out is near the end of the game, you go to a ghost town, literally a town populated
town
by
for
ghosts,
ghosts
inside of like a
town for ghosts.
Yeah, inside of a forest. That's pretty cute. It's a bunch of ghosts. Some of them fight you and then they sheepishly apologize to you after when it turns out that like you're on good terms now. And also a fun like bit of random theming to this is it's like it's a ghost town, but when you walk into the town in the town square, it is all of the buildings that you walk into are casinos run by ghosts. And so you go in and you play like blackjack and slots and stuff. And the whole thing is operated by ghosts.
Oh, wait. So that's part of the mini games, right? They have a casino game? You didn't mention that.
Well,
that's a classic of RPGs.
Yeah. So it's the same blackjack game that you play with Kylene is the game that you play inside the casinos. And for the casino, you have to walk in and spend money to buy like chips that you then spend in the casino. And you can use those. You can use those chips to get gear. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, speaking of gear, though, there's not a lot of equipable equipment, which I also found a little disappointing. You have one accessory you can attach to each character. That's it. Like one slot.
What?
One slot. And so you can just put like a glove that increases their attack or something.
A single glove.
It's unfortunate. That's what I'm telling you. I was saying this not a very expressive game. I didn't feel like I had a lot of like options for creativity.
Well, you know, they did put a dang town inside the train. So I guess some things must be forgiven.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was the end of Samantha's questions. I think I covered that pretty well. And that is, I think we did a pretty thorough review here of Thousand Arms. And we're
Thousand
running pretty long.
Arms.
So.
we have cleared our backlog of golden tickets.
That's right. Now, final thoughts from me. David didn't play it, so he doesn't get any final thoughts. But look, not a fan. I'm going to say, you know, this is a not recommended for me. I think that there's some stuff that it does that's, you know, interesting for the time, the combination of the JRPG elements and the dating sim elements. But the, you know, some interesting female characters that you can date, that opportunity is squandered quite a bit by the fact that the dating mechanic doesn't really feel like dating. It makes the artifice obvious, right? Because it's just like a shuffled deck of questions. So it doesn't feel like I'm really getting to know these characters. And then I just, like I said, was not into the combat and the lack of expressiveness in the gameplay. It felt very quickly like I was just doing what I had to do to move the story forward instead of getting to play around inside of the framework of the combat. And that, you know, would have been much more interesting if that combat interacted more with like the spells, right? Where there was more strategy and building out the characters through the dating and the upgrading. But that didn't really happen. Everyone just sort of gets upgraded together because there's no real reason not to. And then you just do the same strategy in every fight. So that was pretty disappointing. And story-wise, yeah, it's got some fun characters, but it was not a very compelling story for me. It's just a couple somewhat interesting side stories, but not a very likable main character. It's kind of, you know, it has the harem problem of really like a few interesting side characters, right? But not a main story or main character that's particularly compelling. Yeah, and mismatched themes, which was a big issue for me, that everything just feels like I don't really understand the theming of the world that all this stuff inhabits. It just kind of feels like it's all smashed together.
It's like a variety pack.
Yeah, a bit of a variety pack. So that is my review of Thousand Arms. Thank you to Fat Drunk Friend Otaku for your support on Patreon and for submitting the golden ticket. We encourage everyone to, you know, we're talking about JRPGs here. Use your consumables. Don't just sit on your golden ticket. Please,
that's a good
spend
one.
It. And
it's a good one.
And
don't wait for the final boss.
Something. With that, however, let's talk about the Patreon, actually, now that we've wrapped up the review. If you couldn't tell, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/anniegamers, that we have a couple different tiers. You can get into our priority question list and access bonus articles and podcasts, including an episode that we did talking about my Japan trip earlier this year. And you also get a golden ticket. Just being a $5 subscriber gets you the golden ticket. You can use it whenever you want, but you get it for signing up at that tier. Now, because some people are not using their consumables, we are introducing a new tier to the Patreon.
What?
The new tier is $10. And for $10, you get a golden ticket that replenishes every year. So each year you get to request one thing. And then I will have to endeavor to not take a year to review things. But that's the goal there. So you don't get, they don't pile up, you know, they don't roll over. So use it or lose it. So I think it, you know, hopefully encourages folks to use those. I really like having this kind of setup. It's you know, helps us with getting ideas for shows to do. And it's always interesting to review something that I wouldn't have checked out otherwise, even if I don't like it. You know, it stretches my critical muscles to kind of try something out and see what I think of it. And also, has anyone used a golden ticket on you, David?
I don't think so.
Okay, do that. Spend your golden tickets on David, not just on me. There's a lot of stuff I'd like to force David to do. So you too can do that. All right, with that, I think we're wrapping up. You can read old articles from me on Anime News Network, but David is still writing for Otaku USA Magazine. Any interesting stuff you've reviewed recently?
Oh, no, I don't have any reviews right now.
Oh, okay. All right. David and Inaki stream video games every Saturday night at twitch.tv/uwusmallbean. What are you playing?
Persona 5.
Speaking of Atlas.
Uh-huh.
You can check out show notes, blog posts, and a link to the official Anigamers Discord on anigamers.com. Email us questions, responses, and topic suggestions at podcast@anigamers.com, or talk to us on, you know, I'm not on X anymore, but @VampsVOVA and PTVO on there. David is gone from X entirely. Good job.
Bye.
We're both on Mastodon and Blue Sky. I'm definitely on both. I'm VampsVO on Blue Sky and VampsVO at Mastodon.social on Mastodon. And are you on either of those? Do you want to promote either of them?
This is so complicated. Let's try that. Let me try mine next episode.
All right. I am on both of those though, so feel free to hang out. And episodes are available. Actually, we have a Discord. I did say the official Anime Gamers Discord, but I want to encourage everybody to go check out the Discord, hang out.
The Discord is really where you will find us.
It's good, and it's free. You don't need to be a patron for it, so please come check it out. And episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. I think Spotify hasn't been updated recently, but if you're a Spotify listener, you wouldn't know that because the episodes haven't been updated. So I will be getting that fixed. And we could always use more reviews to help more people find the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Fat Drunk Friend Otaku for the golden ticket request. And thank you, David, for being a good sport while I reviewed a game you didn't play.
Hey, Evan, I was just excited to listen to you talk about RPGs. Although now that I've listened to you talk about RPGs, I'm wondering if you playing RPGs is a good idea.
It might not be, but, you know, I need to know. The real
shit. If we get a few more in you, we'll really know for sure.
Anyway, that's it for us. We'll see you again in about a month. Later.